As this is a very simple and indeed a very artificial way of avoiding capital gains tax, there is an anti-avoidance provision which prevents this from working.
On the first disposal in August 2010 of 2,000 shares, BEV's gain will be as we originally calculated, i.e. £40,000. However, if BEV subsequently disposes of more shares to either the same person, i.e. Jason, or to another person connected with BEV, within 6 years, then the anti-avoidance provisions will take effect. You'll recall that BEV gave some more shares to Jason in September 2010. The anti-avoidance rules in Section 19, TCGA 1992, will therefore be applied. Under Section 19, we will have to prepare revised computations of the gains which arose in August 2010 and September 2010. We start with the disposal in August of 2,000 shares.
Where these rules apply, the sales proceeds will be an appropriate proportion of the market value of all of the assets disposed of. The assets given away in the two transactions looked at together are 6,000 shares in BEV Co Limited. These 6,000 shares have a total value of £420,000. As 2,000 of the 6,000 shares were transferred in August, the appropriate proportion of the market value is 2/6 of £420,000, being £140,000. From this we can deduct the base cost of £40,000 as before to give BEV a revised capital gain in August of £100,000. We do a similar calculation in respect of the gift to Jason in September. Out of the total of 6,000 shares, 4,000 shares were transferred in September. The sale proceeds are therefore treated as 4/6 of £420,000, being £280,000. We deduct the base cost to give a revised gain in September of £200,000. If we add these together, the total gains chargeable on BEV will be £300,000. You will see, therefore, that these aggregated gains are exactly the same as would have been the case had BEV simply transferred all 6,000 shares in one go. The only way that BEV could have avoided falling foul of Section 19 was to leave a period of more than 6 years between the two transfers to Jason. Finally, in this session, there is an interaction between the series of transactions rules and the chattels rules. These rules apply when a taxpayer has a set of assets, for example, a set of antique dining chairs, which would have a higher value if sold as a collection as opposed to being sold individually. There is some anti-avoidance legislation to prevent a taxpayer from reducing his capital gains by selling each individual asset in the set separately to obtain an artificial advantage. The essence of the legislation is to treat a series of disposals either to the same person or one or more connected persons as being one transaction for capital gains tax purposes. Having treated the series of disposals as one transaction, if the 5/3 rule is appropriate, it will be applied to total gross sale proceeds. Let us illustrate this point by way of an example. Toby bought a set of two antique dining chairs in May 1988 for £1,000. The two chairs form part of a matching set, and they are together valued at £9,000. Toby is considering giving both of the chairs to his grandson. If he does so, Toby will be left with a chargeable gain. One way to reduce the chargeable gain would be to give away the chairs in two separate disposals of one chair each. We're told that the chairs are valued at £3,000 each if they were to be sold separately. Toby gives one chair to his grandson. This will not give rise to a capital gain as it will be covered by the chattels exemption. You will recall that if a chattel costs less than £6,000, and disposal proceeds are also less than £6,000, any gain is exempt from CGT. Toby waits 6 months, then he gives the second chair to his grandson. Again, the resulting gain will be exempt from CGT under the chattels rules. Again, this seems like a very simple way to apparently avoid a capital gain. However, there are anti-avoidance rules to prevent a taxpayer from abusing the chattels rules so as to avoid a CGT liability. Where a taxpayer disposes of a set of assets by a number of different transactions to the same person, the gifts are treated as one transaction for CGT purposes. Toby is therefore treated as having disposed of a set of assets for the total market value of the set, which here is £9,000. The set cost Toby £1,000 in May 1988.
Toby will therefore be left with a chargeable gain of £8,000. This is the gain that Toby would have made had he given both the chairs, i.e. the whole set, to his grandson as one gift. As the set of chairs is a chattel and gross proceeds exceed £6,000, we must consider the five-thirds rule. The five-thirds formula is applied to the total gross disposal proceeds. Here, gross proceeds are £9,000, so we deduct £6,000 and multiply the excess by 5 over 3 to give an alternative capital gain of £5,000. Toby's chargeable gain is therefore £5,000. Toby's capital gains of £5,000 are divided between the two disposals, one in January 2011 and one in July 2011. The gain of £5,000 must therefore be split, and as the chairs each had the same market value at the date of transfer, we split the gain equally. Toby is therefore treated as having made a capital gain of £2,500 in 2010-11 and a gain of £2,500 in 2011-12.
Let us complete this session with a couple of practice questions.
A gift of shares by James to his grandson in July gives rise to a capital gain of £6,000. The gift of a cottage to his daughter produces a capital loss of £5,000. Losses on transactions between connected persons must be carried forward and used against future gains on disposals to that same connected person. Therefore, the only way that James can utilise this loss of £5,000 is by making a future disposal to his daughter, which gives rise to a capital gain. The gift of the picture by James to his son in September gives a loss of £4,000. This can be set against the gain arising on the gift of land to James's son in October. The chargeable gain of £3,500 in October is therefore reduced to zero by the loss brought forward. The excess loss of £500 will be carried forward by James and set against future gains on transfers to his son. James' gains are therefore £6,000.
Let us start with Charlotte's husband, Henry. Henry and Charlotte are connected because they are spouses. Charlotte is not connected with her Uncle George. Uncle George is not a relative as defined in section 286 of TCGA 1992. Charlotte is, however, connected with Henry's sister, Henrietta. Henrietta is Charlotte's sister-in-law. A sister-in-law is a relative of a spouse, i.e., Henrietta is a relative of Charlotte's husband, Henry. Charlotte is not connected to her financial advisor. Assuming Percy and Charlotte are not related, the only way Charlotte and Percy will be connected is if they are business partners. We are not given any information in the question to this effect, so we assume they are not connected. Charlotte is connected with her mother-in-law, Isabel. Isabel is a relative of Charlotte's spouse. Finally, Charlotte is not connected with her best friend, Tamsin. Tamsin is not a relative nor a business partner, so they are not connected persons. This concludes this session on connected persons and series of transactions.